Thank you, everybody. I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to join us today in our one of many future series around confronting racism, especially a very pertinent topic nowadays. And although historically it's always been a pertinent topic, but more pronounced in the media, of course, now, as we're all aware. I'd like to also thank the APPD to, you know, and APA to kind of letting us, you know, sponsor and do this event. And of course, our continuing support with other educational topics that we have all most likely been part of currently and in the past. And of course, a big thanks to Dr. Ditson for taking the time and sharing her expertise on one of our, like I mentioned, many topics on this going forward. And just like a little background context, Dr. Ditson, she is, as you people have heard, she's currently coming from Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. She's an associate professor there at George Washington University School of Medicine, and also had a master's education from GW as well in 2018. She's currently oversees also a associate director of medical education for the Howard University medical students during the inpatient rotation in Children's National, and is also the chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics section on Hospital Medicine Diversity and Inclusion Task Force. And she is here today to join us and give us some information and hopefully be able to expand upon some of our current or lack of understanding around self-awareness when it comes to our personal biases and of course the work culture assessment. So without further ado, I will hand it over to Gabrina.
Thank you so much, Francisco. He was actually, when I first came to Children's, I have to say this, Francisco was my boss. They saw me out at a community hospital and they had just Children's had just taken over. And so Francisco, I always say, is my introduction to Children's National. So thank you for having me. The title of this topic is Self-Awareness, Personal and Work Culture Assessment. Specifically talking about racism and talking about anti-racism, which is a term that we are hearing more often. So I have no relevant financial relationships or will not be talking about any commercial products or commercial services discussed in this activity. And then I'm not talking about a commercial product or device in my presentation. And part of this, since we only have an hour, it's really for us to have a discussion and also for me to give you resources on what you can use and what your institution can use to help kind of build an anti-racism community. So the first objective I have is describing anti-racist. The second is describe personal and work cultural assessment and how can it lead to anti-racism. And the third is to identify ways in your personal and work culture to be an anti-racist. So what is an anti-racist? We constantly are hearing a talk about this, but this term was actually really brought up with Dr. Kendi. And an anti-racist is a person who actively seeks to raise the consciousness about race and racism, but also takes action when they see racial power inequities in everyday life. So I'm gonna show this video of kind of from him of his definition of what an anti-racist is.
My name is Ibram X. Kendi, and I'm the author of How to Be an Anti-Racist. And this book really seeks to show that the contrast is actually not between racist and not racist, but the contrast is between racist and anti-racist. I think many people who self-identify as not racist don't realize is that really over the course of history, nearly every group of people that we actually consider to be racist have also identified as not racist, whether that's white supremacists today or segregationists of yesterday. And so really each of us should be striving to be anti-racist, not necessarily striving to be not racist, because really that's a term primarily of denial. And it's a term really that doesn't have much meaning. But it does mean something to be racist. When someone says that there's something wrong with a racial group, they're being racist. When someone says there's nothing wrong with any of the racial groups, they're being anti-racist. When someone supports policies that create and reproduce racial inequity, they're being racist. When someone supports policies that yield and create racial equity than being an anti-racist. And these aren't necessarily identities or fixed categories or tattoos. Literally, what we're doing in each moment determines who and what we are in each moment. And people change from moment to moment and from year to year. And I think we should identify people based on what they're saying and doing, because no one ever becomes racist or even anti-racist.
And so this is kind of a great, just a great definition of kind of what it is to be an anti-racist. And as he said, it's an active thing. Every day is a conscious effort of kind of what are we doing in our personal life, and then what are we presenting in our work culture to actively be anti-racist. So since I'm talking to program directors, everyone knows of this change from the ACGME in 2019, where the program in partnership with the sponsoring institution must engage in practices that focus on mission-driven, ongoing, systematic recruitment and retention of a diverse and inclusive workforce of residents, fellows if present, faculty members, senior administrative staff members, and other relevant members of its academic community. And I think this is important that they wrote this out in 2019, but I want you as program directors to take that extra step to say, we're also going to incorporate an anti-racist curriculum because we know systemic racism exists. And what are we doing to kind of go against that in our own system, in our own personal lives? So I always say the first thing is taking a personal assessment. I know one of the lectures they're going to have in the future with this virtual cafe is on implicit bias. And I won't go into detail about that. I know I take the Harvard implicit bias test at least once a year. And they have a bias about different subjects or different items, which I think is important because I think you cannot only just do implicit bias, but I think that is the first step to know kind of what are your biases. And everyone has it. And so I think it's important to know what are you doing in your personal life and what biases that you have. The second is reflection. Just like we reflect on patients, we can also reflect our interactions or reflect on kind of how did that situation go and reflect on things that happen in our everyday life. And are we doing things to be anti-racist? You know, how was our intentions and how did it come off? So I think that's also important. And like I said, practice always makes perfect. What are we doing in everyday life to kind of fight against the systematic racism that we have? And what are we doing to strive that? Again, as stated in the definition, it's very conscious. So you have to be very conscious about it and be very proactive about it in your everyday life. And so that's on a personal level, items that we can do. What about on the work life? And so I think we all have to say for work assessment and our work culture, what is the purpose of the institution that we're working for? What are their goals? When we look at leadership, do we have buy-in from leadership to be an anti-racist environment? Do we have a team of people at the institution who can advise us or help us become an anti-racist environment? And lastly, in our work institution, do we have someone who is doing analysis of this data and analysis on how we're doing so we know what departments that we're doing well and what we're not doing so well? So two things I wanted to show you were two resources that I found that were really good kind of, hey, maybe we may not have the buy-in or we may not have the team. But it was two resources. One was from USC. They have a great, if you ever go to their website, from their urban education, their diversity, inclusion, and equity, it's wonderful. It has a lot of resources. And the other one, something called Race Forward. Um, And this is a racial equity readiness assessment for workforce development. And kind of if you go through their website and you can actually reach out to them for materials about kind of just doing assessment if your institution is racial equity readiness. And so to me, it was a great resource. Like, hey, I don't know where to start. There are places where, you know, they have a Ready for Equity and Workforce Development that goes over anti-racism. What are we doing for the practices? And this is the form that you can download to contact them, and they will provide resources. So that's one place. And again, the other was USC, which has some great resources on kind of building an anti-racist curriculum. So purpose, buy-in, team analysis. And I would say for everyone, for institution, please look up kind of what are the goals, what are the purpose of your institution, and is it on the same path of being an anti-racist environment? The next is we're gonna do an activity, and this is gonna be a bulk of kind of the presentation. I wanna give you resources, and I will put the link in the chat for everyone, so they can use in your breakout rooms, but we're gonna go into virtual breakout rooms for discussion. In each breakout room, I want one person from each group to present key points from the group discussion. So the breakout rooms are gonna be 30 minutes, which seems maybe like a long period of time, but really it's not, because it's gonna be a very robust discussion. And then just one person kind of come back to us as a full group to discuss what you discuss in the breakout room. If we can have one representative from each breakout room kind of summarize what you discuss and anything that you learn from the discussion. So we can start with breakout room one.
I'm not sure I know the number of which.
Okay. No problem. So whichever breakout room want to go, we'll just go in order. So does anyone want to volunteer to go first?
I'll be happy to go first for our breakout room. So 2 minutes. We first brought up cases that or situations that we've had where there was inequity or racism involved. Things that were brought up were racist jokes in private workrooms about patients, the issues that were brought up, reporting inequity and no follow through. There was a situation where a research supervisor was biased against people of color and women, and one of their trainees was a woman of color, and she was told by someone else. A resident brought up to an attending or someone in charge that the care a patient was receiving may have been affected by their race. There's some inequity there, but they were quickly shut down. Patients asking for a different physician due to the resident being black or being a different color. And then solutions that we brought up, an anonymous complaint, a system for an anonymous complaint that goes to someone who has authority who has to deal with it, like a diversity and inclusion director. That one of the complaints was made to them for one of our situations, and it turned into a teachable moment where the residents were brought in and explained what they were told, what they were reported to have done, and why that affected people, and there was some learning there. A pathway making it easy to know who to report to and accountability, and one thing we talked about was a loop back to where the person who reported the complaint knows what happens with their report, so they feel like something was done. There's been required training on microaggressions. One of the really nice ideas was a quarterly equity rounds where they review a real case of inequity that occurred in that hospital at that for that quarter. A communications course for the situation where the patient asked for a different physician because of the physician's color of their skin, so that all attendings and residents are prepared for that type of situation. If it happens again, they know what to say and how to say it. And that's as fast as I can go.
Thank you. You guys came up with a lot in 30 minutes, so very impressive. The next group, whoever wants to volunteer next.
You know, I'll go ahead and volunteer for our group. I tried to get one of the others to volunteer, and then time ran out before I could coerce them to do so. But as for sort of how does that show up in our institutions? We talked about how that shows up in leadership, especially at the highest echelons. We talked about how that shows up in our reporting of to Child Protective Services and the disproportionate representation often of people of color who are reported. And that's just very interesting. There may be valid reasons for doing so, but that clearly was part of the experience of our group. At our institution, we have a behavioral response team, and these are parents who escalate, and we have a social services group that comes, and we discover that a disproportionate share of those people are people of color as well. So it shows up there. It shows up unintentionally in just the conversations that we have. And while there's no malintent intended, some people, you know, feel like they're walking on eggshells. It's like, I don't know what to say or who it's going to offend, even if I don't intend to offend anyone. And so now there's some reticence about having some of those conversations because it's not a safe space. And I talked about the minority tax, but the majority tax, and that's the people who are in the majority who are saying, gosh, I just don't know what to do. So those are some of the things. And then opportunities, we talked about the training, someone alluded to the implicit bias training that people are doing for people who are interviewing trainees for fellowship or residency. We talked about blinded interviews with a interview set of questions so that you're leveling the playing field and asking people similar domains of questions as opposed to reporting back that you really got along with the applicant because you and that applicant share some passion. So that was one of the ways. About opening up things for competitive, a competitive process versus appointing. There's a lot of appointing that goes on versus creating the opportunity and asking people if they are interested in providing a job description that allows them to see what the responsibilities would be, because it gives you an opportunity to identify people that may have not been on your radar, who have skills that you may not be aware of. So those are some of the highlights.
Thank you. Great. Great. Some great highlights and some great discussion, some great recommendations. Anyone would like to go next?
Can talk. So we talked about, I think we covered a lot of the same things, so I'll try to bring up things that were different. We also talked on sort of the burden on URMs or people of color to teach and to do all of, to do the work. And also just what COVID has brought to the service in terms of inequities, both with patients and with people who work here. And just, you know, that coming, even having to come back to work from working from home, has been a burden that is not equal for everyone, right? In terms of, you know, who's caring for children, who's caring for elders, who's able to work from home and has flexibility in their job, and who needs to be in the office, and those inequities. In terms of our ideas, we talked about for people who are not URM or not people of color, recognizing where we have influence and using it for change to try to advocate and not putting all of the burden on everyone else. Collecting demographics in our organizations and having kind of a dashboard on an external webpage to show everyone what we're doing. Having newsletters from our departments or divisions include a diversity, equity, inclusion section to kind of bring that to the forefront with articles, talks that are coming up, that kind of thing. Having M&Ms that focus on that. When writing policies, thinking about how does DEI come up within these policies and what are we doing about it? Having it be a policy that when people give talks, they talk about the health equity issues within whatever the topic is, and that when there are evaluations of talks, they have questions about were there implicit biases in this talk, what were they, and how did this talk include health equity issues? The idea of those things were sort of weave into what's already happening, not that every talk is a DEI talk, but that there is, that's part of everything we do. That's a big piece of what we talked about.
Thank you. Next group.
I can go. Hi, everybody. So our group also talked some of the same things that have been brought up, the inequity in reporting out of the NICU to DCFS drug screening. That's something I know at my department we've talked about too. We talked about inequity in pay for faculty, and that some of those things, that's like a policy thing that you can look at that sometimes isn't looked at, and it's important to step back and really investigate that. I talked about our department. We've done a climate survey the past 3 years, and this year in that survey, we asked specifically about experiences of racism and microaggression and asked for examples of that. And that's something that we're using to then take forward. And we have a DE&I retreat we're doing tomorrow for our whole department. We're trying to address some of the things that came out in that climate survey. There's a lot in there. It's tough, but it's, you can't do anything until you know what you're dealing with. So it's been really helpful. We also talked about not having enough support for the people who have positions, DE&I positions, not having enough supported time to do the work that needs to be done, and also the not having enough residents and faculty to ask for help, and how important it is to also use your allies in those situations too, to make that pool a little larger so that people aren't getting burned out.
Thank you. Just for time constraints, for the rest of the groups, were there any topics that have not been discussed already that you want to contribute?
Hi, our group discussed, just because the implicit bias training is happening, does it mean it's actually taking effect? Is it really making things better or worse, or what does it actually mean anything? So that was the major question we left with.
And what was the solutions, did you think, or what were some answers people said about that question? Or people may not know, is it helping or not? Or kind of future step, let's say it's not helping. Was that discussed or?
We didn't have enough time for that.
Yeah, and so this is only an hour, and the purpose is kind of just to open and give you resources, because we can talk about this for hours, for days, about things that we can do. And so I'm just going to give you at the end some resources, some conclusions that I, you know, just from hearing what people were saying in their different talks. So one thing which I think is very important, this is a team effort to build an anti-racism institution. It's a team effort, and we have to work individually and then also work as a team. One of the groups, I love this term, talked about culture humility. Not just culture confidence, but culture humility. And I forgot which group, but I was like, I love that. Understanding your patient and your patient experience and your patient's culture, that could be unique to your patient and not just kind of overall of a, like a culture confidence. So I love that term that someone said. Important to have institutional support. I think we keep talking about this of, you know, institutions say, oh, we want diversity and inclusion, we want anti-racism, but it takes money and it takes people and it takes FTE. So I think only saying it, but giving the background support and giving them funding for that organization. And it's been many studies in the literature that show having diversity kind of increases productivity. And so I think that's kind of one thing, again, getting buy-in and knowing that we need support for these efforts. And three is take action on racism and inequities. And kind of, I love some of the great discussions that people were having of kind of things you can do. Anonymous reporting, having a D&I office, having a D&I officer to someone who is looking at this and also, you know, doing analysis of it. So I want to give you some resources. Say, hey, I don't know where to start. I don't know where our institution to start. There's two things that I found. One is the AAAMC. They have a, and I'll put both links in our chat. They have a diversity and inclusion strategic planning toolkit. Here at Children's National, we actually use them to do a survey of our diversity and inclusion, what we were doing, and they can come up with a strategy. And then another place is a consultant found called Brave Space. And so I'll show you their flyer, which was really good. And this is another, say if you don't know where to start, these are two organizations, AAMC and the Brave Space, where they can kind of help you because they work with Center of Anti-Racism, Equity and Leadership Strategy and Practice. So they can guide you, kind of do an assessment of your institution or of your division, and kind of give you guidance on what can be done to help your diversity and inclusion, to help with your equity, and making sure you have an anti-racist environment. So those were two resources I felt could be very useful for institutions to work towards an anti-racism environment. And again, I will put both of those links in the chat. And here are some references that are, some of them are in the chat. And I think you will get my PowerPoint slide. I'll make sure I will give it to Francisco so you can distribute. And then if there's any last minute questions, please feel free. I think we ran out of time, but please feel free to email me and I'll put my email in the chat but I hope you had a great discussion and I hope this begins new processes at your institution. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabrina, and everybody for attending. Just want to say, you know, we hope these are helpful for you. And then, you know, as we're kind of developing each session as a foundation to kind of continue the conversation, our next one will be on, let me confirm, on November 19th on microaggressions. So we hope that everybody can attend. We'll also send the slides and also evaluations. So if you have time, please fill them out because it'll be very helpful as we continue to improve on this program for future sessions. So thank you, everybody, and have a wonderful day.